Hello, everyone. I am super pumped to kick off this week's episodes. We've been going for about 3 weeks now with the 99 Dev Problems live stream. We started it over the holidays, knew that we'd have a little bit, you know, lower attendance in that space. And I'm really excited to hit the ground running this week and chat with the awesome Tim Banks. Tim, I would love for you to introduce yourself.
Hello, Tessa. I am Tim Banks. I am a brown belt in Brazilian Jiu-Jitsu, five-time Pan American champion, three-time American national champion, three-time silver medalist in world championships. I'm like this close to getting my black belt, like this close. Probably happened this year. I also do tech work to pay the bills. And we'll talk more about that later. But also, I was a chef. Also, was a construction worker. I've done a lot of stuff, a lot of fun stuff. So,
ooh, okay,
you didn't know I was a chef?
I didn't know that, honestly, but like I feel like based on like your username and other things you've dropped around, I should have picked up on that. Yeah, that's really cool. Okay, I can't wait to unpack all of that. What are you doing today? Because those are really impressive, awesome things. So how does that play into where you're at today?
So today I'm a solutions architect at Kaelent, who is a professional service provider under that specializes in AWS. And I'm also an advisor at Expanso, which is the company that brings you Bacalhau, which is a distributed compute over data solution. It is a workload orchestrator focused on distributed compute. So I'm doing some advisory work there as well.
Very cool. What's like one of their use cases?
I'll tell you the biggest use case is like if you have like a lot of people, if you have data in disparate places that you need to run ETL on or anything like that, a lot of people use Snowflake. Amazon just introduced Aurora DSQL for that. But if you can literally run any job anywhere you have compute, right? And you can do that with Kubernetes, and it's a lot like shooting a squirrel with a bazooka. But if you just need to do simple orchestration of simple data transformation jobs, you don't have to necessarily pay to bring all your data into one spot just to do that. It is both expensive, it takes time, and then also you're consolidating compute for no reason, right?
Right.
So you can run jobs where your data lies to do ETL stuff, to do any kind of thing you need. And which you've always been capable of doing if you want to log in and do it, but the orchestration of those jobs is difficult. So any time where you have data that you need to run any kind of compute against in a distributed manner and you want an easy way to orchestrate it, that's when you're going to want to use Expanso.
Interesting. Okay, I'm not going to side tangent on this too long, but there's so I'm working on sort of building out a SaaS app, right? I'm taking some of the services that I offer and starting to productize them. And I am like so anti this I'm going to say this with a grain of salt and that I'm not anti it because there is a reason why you need it. But I was talking to a developer and he's like, well, you're going to have to get, you know, Kubernetes and everything set up. And I was like, hold up. I don't think I need that giant cloud infrastructure to actually power my app. And like, honestly, and I'm not saying that I'm against it because I've had a career in it too, as well, working inside of some of that industry. But for me, it just seems like overkill. And so I've been on this like sort of tangent of like, how can we build this technical stack that doesn't require cloud and Kubernetes and this, like you said, shooting a squirrel with a bazooka, which is a perfect analogy of over creating infrastructure, right? Over building something that is overkill. And so this is very interesting to me. I'm definitely going to have to check them out.
Yeah, it's worth a look. Please go kick the tires. Let me know. Sure. We're in a stage right now where we want people to try it and we want us to tell you, if you love it, that's great. If you hate it, I definitely want to hear from you.
Yeah, for sure. Well, data is a huge part of what I'm doing, right? There's a lot of insights and sentiment and sort of information that goes into it. And so there's a giant amount of data that will need to be stored and sort of referenced as as you're interacting. I absolutely will. Very cool.
So I one of the interesting use cases around that as our devices and everything we use become smarter and smarter, if you have great examples like vehicles, right? If you have a vehicle fleet that has any kind of compute in it, do you need to send data all the way back to some place to run some compute and then send it back? Or can you just run that job on the compute that you have available?
Yes. I have so many clients in this space. Not so many, because I only have a handful of clients generally, but three out of...
That was a perfectly good lie. You could have just ran with that. I have so many clients. So I'm just over... I want you to know I'm cutting out some precious time to do this because I have so many clients. I would have gone with that one. I would have just so many clients.
Okay. Either way, though, where I wanted to go is in this exact situation, right? In this edge use case, in this on-device use case, in the sort of robotics, in bringing technology to sort of the edge scenario. And I think it's really interesting because, like we talked about in pre-show, I think it's a direction where tech is headed, right? And like, how can we start to function? One of my previous clients I had, I'm only going to derail on this for a second because I think it's just really cool, is about like essentially reproducibility, right? So if you're going to deploy out to those different platforms, like you need everything to be exactly the way that it is supposed to be, right? And then like you said, bringing that data back, why are we bringing data all the way across something when you can communicate with the data right where it's actually at? Yeah. So really intrigued by Expanso. Okay, really, really cool.
So check it out there. And I feel like it's one of those cases where as more people use it, more use cases will pop up.
Exactly. So. Exactly. That's like AR, AI. That's kind of everywhere that we're at, right? And it's like the more that we can start to experiment, the more we're going to learn.
Absolutely.
Okay. So with all this awesome career history and amazing strength and agility, what does your developer education look like?
I am one of the... I am a classic example of the unmedicated Gen X 80s kid who learned to program on a Commodore 64. I learned Microsoft ROM Basic so I could do animations and stuff like that. And then I did that. Didn't have any other computer other than that, other than like a Sega, until I joined the Marine Corps. And then in the Marine Corps, I was an avionics. I was a C-130 flight navigation systems operator, which means I was a flying avionics technician. So essentially, I did calculus in midair. But we worked on Vietnam era level navigation systems, which use inertial navigation units, right? But you had to be able to do everything from use it to do eye level, which is intermediate level maintenance on it, which means I'm doing resting test bench and stuff like that. I have to diagnose down to the component. And so as part of that school, you basically got what was an associate's degree in electrical engineering. You learned binary, you learned hex, you learned all the things like that. You knew how solid state transistors and you know, silicone essentially worked. And then I use that to kick out to the civilian career of being a system admin and an operator for manufacturers. And then everything was self-taught from there. So I have never taken a formal programming class of any kind.
Dang. That is a very cool and very interesting path into technology. I mean, obviously we hear sort of all walks of life when I ask that question, but I think getting sort of that experience in the Marine Corps and like really like having to sort of, like you said, make those calculations as you're flying, that really forces you to like learn the systems and learn everything that's happening within them. That's very, very, very cool.
What I think is really interesting is like, you got folks like me and I feel like I might be on a good day, like a D+ level internet celebrity. But you've got folks like Kelsey Hightower, who's self-taught. You got Ian Coldwater, who's self-taught. You've got a lot of names who are doing a lot of important work around these communities who are self-taught. And it's not that people don't realize it, but people don't understand how difficult it was to do that back then versus now. And I feel like we should be overemphasizing the ability for people to learn themselves without having to go to college for all this. And I will not get on my modern college is a business racket soapbox today. But I can simply say that and the more and more people and more types of roles have to be more and more comfortable with technology and the principles of technology. And it needs to be as accessible as possible. We have all this information out there that many megacorps have trained AI on for free. And yet we still have a hard time of making it freely accessible and easy in a standard way for people to learn themselves. And I think we can do better at that.
Well, I agree. I love that you have a soapbox around this. I am also self-taught, tried to go to college 3 times for criminal justice, business management, and programming, dropped out all 3 times. The programming one, I only dropped out because I did that towards the end because I felt like I needed a degree, just like you said, right? I felt like I needed that degree to be like, oh, I'm capable. When at the end of the day, I had freelance work and I was in a huge project with a really big agency that was very well known in Minneapolis. And I'm like, wait a minute, why am I paying for schooling when I know these skills? And they're teaching me like how to build a website in tables. Are you serious right now? So yeah. I agree with you. I also had like what W3 schools back when I tried to learn or when I was learning to code. That was it. And W3 schools was beautiful and great and really helpful, but it was like source code and you literally had to learn the system from the ground up like you did in the Marine Corps.
Oh, and one other thing I will. I'm going to just like tiptoe onto the soapbox for a second because there are so many companies that offer internships and they only offer internships for college. Folks in college, the people who need those internships in the same sense that you would do internships for plumbing or welding or mechanical work or HVAC are the people who are trying to learn it on the job.
Mm-hmm.
So they should have apprenticeships for this job. And if companies would offer apprenticeships for this job, they could actually get away with treating, you know, the stuff they say, like we're a family and they like to abuse you. Yeah. They could do that a little bit easier, but also it would be for good. Right. Because they would actually be giving these folks something like that, that they need. So yeah, companies should be doing apprenticeships and not internships. And I will beat that drum until the head breaks and then I will yell through it.
I agree with that. I have brought in multiple people into my business and now I'm not like a big, huge business with lots of revenue, but I've definitely brought a number of developers in because I'm like, hey, I'm doing the work anyway, so you should learn it. So come alongside of me, learn the work. I'll coach you along. You can help me deliver something and then boom, you've got something that you can take and actually bring that into an interview or bring that into a conversation. And I think it's so important to give those chances. So I love your soapbox here.
So we've got a comment from X about the companies wanting college students because of insurance liability. And the fact of the matter is these large companies, they will absolutely, because they will make exceptions for folks in the military all the time. They will do internships for folks in the military without college degrees. So it is not an insurance liability thing. That is not sufficient deterrent for the practice.
Yeah. Interesting. We've been having such a good conversation that I didn't see all these amazing people in the chat. Kevin and Emmett and Rizelle and Tejas and Trust. I don't know that I've met Trust yet. So hello, Roxy. What a great, great group that we have this morning. Okay. So
good morning, everybody.
I agree. As someone who has hired people and worked in these different industries, been a part of the recruiting process, I know for a fact it has nothing to do with insurance. It has to do with the fact that they think that they need something and in their minds it's what's inside of corporate. It's what's ingrained in their ladder. It's what's ingrained in their structure. And changing that means a whole new HR process, a whole new whatever it is, right, within that company. So it's a pain point that's really hard to definitely solve. I fully agree, James. Fully agree that it's frustrating nonetheless. Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay. So we dove into what you're doing. We dove into your education. Love that. What kind of problems are you facing today? Right? Like you've got your hands in a couple different things, but like what challenges are you seeing and things that you're trying to hurdles you're taking down?
So it's interesting. I've got, you know, two different kind of areas I'm working in and some bifurcated responsibilities, but there is a lot of overlap, right?
Yeah.
On a lack of, organizational knowledge around, how things work. Right.
Yep.
And I say this, and this has been a recurring thing. I have made so much money based on folks really not understanding the hows and the whys of things work. Right. I was a principal cloud economist at the Duckbill Group. And one of the main things that you can do to save money on your infrastructure operations is to understand how your infrastructure works.
Mm-hmm.
And then you can start making decisions around how you want it to operate because now you know how it works versus just putting money in the money hole and getting infrastructure out.
Yeah.
And we still see that now. There's a lot of folks that need, we need expertise in this and we need expertise in that because we don't have it right now. And it's once people have the expertise, we're expensive. We're not cheap.
Right? Mm-hmm.
And so there is really this vacuum of interest. And this started with Kubernetes. A lot of people had to hire Kubernetes talent and they got paid a lot of money because nobody knew it. And then the stopgap became the ecosystem, which offered a lot of services and tools and things like that, which let people run Kubernetes without knowing Kubernetes.
Yeah. Right? Yes.
But then you become dependent on that. And as either providers raise their prices or they get bought by Broadcom, you know, and then all of a sudden people were like, oh, we actually don't know how to run this ourselves. And they painted themselves into corners. Yep. And so you're seeing a lot of folks either who have already painted themselves into corners or realizing like, actually, hey, we're going to paint ourselves into a corner here. And that's the main trend I'm seeing is folks who are either have painted themselves in the corners and need help, or folks are like, we actually don't want to paint ourselves in the corner because we're seeing how that's bad and we need to get our expertise up. This kind of goes along what I'm saying about internship, but the notion of real professional development and having your folks learn things, employing people and then letting them learn is not a thing our industry seems to really be good at anymore. They want you to know everything already, right? And let me give you this as a person who, Brazilian Jiu-Jitsu is not something you're going to start at being good. I don't care how athletic you are. And I'm 49-year-old. I'm short. I'm built like a bowling ball with corgi limbs. Like I am not particularly like people, you don't look at me and think I'm an athlete. Right. So we'll get some, you know, college gym bro who can CrossFit till the cows come home and has cardio and, you know, like 2% body fat. And that's all well and good. You get them in there and they listen to Joe Rogan. They think, all right, I know some jujitsu. We're going to slap hands. And I'm just going to exhaust them in 30 seconds and then have my way with him. Right. And this is the thing that happens over and over and over again. Right. You have to get over the idea that you're just going to instantly be good at something, right?
Yep.
You have to build fucking up into your budget, right? Because you need to do it if you want to learn and grow, right?
Yep.
But we swing the opposite way. It's like, oh, well, we're just gonna fail fast until we learn. I'm like, no, because that means two white belts are going to become black belts just by rolling with each other, is what you're telling me. And that's not how that works.
That's a great analogy.
A gym, a successful jiu-jitsu gym, right, or dojo or academy has, you know, a lot of white belts and then fewer blue belts and then fewer purple belts and then fewer brown belts and just a few black belts. But then sometimes they have a lot of black belts because people have stayed with them a long time, right? But the process of learning is part of the academy. You have to, when you are a white belt, you're going to lose all the time. Blue belts are going to wipe the mat with you. Black belts are going to be untouchable. Right. But that is necessary for everyone to learn. And we don't do that in our industry anymore. We don't have the notion of an industry where people learn and grow. They expect you to know everything. They're really probably not going to promote you. Right. Or if they do, they're going to give you just a little bit. And so if you learn to grow, you go pop from company to company. There are some people that say, oh, I've stayed here this long and I've worked in this thing. I work my channel up. But you notice they're typically specialists. Right.
Yeah. Or exceptionally great companies that are harder to find.
Yeah. Yeah. That is true. And so I really feel like that notion of losing operational knowledge in the pursuit of velocity is kind of what we're doing with that. We don't want people to really learn. We just want people to do.
Yeah. Yeah. You know, it's interesting because I've been on my own little soapbox lately as I've been diving, you know, deeper into different areas, right? And as my business has evolved and taken me into sort of different areas of like realizing that a lot of developers today, they have so many tools, so many libraries, so many frameworks, so many things handed to them that they don't actually fundamentally understand what is happening behind the scenes in those frameworks or those libraries. And it's I joke that I'm like, oh, my dev chops suck today. But at the same time, like my dev chops kind of don't suck, right? Because like I came from a world where like I understood the entire system. How is it exactly my infrastructure working alongside of how is exactly my code working, right? Because I had to understand it. I didn't have all these tools. We didn't have all these advancements. There wasn't like warp, right, for terminal where like you no longer have to actually remember terminal anymore. It's like I had to know all the things. And now today I see developers who are more like, oh, well, I don't actually know like React, right? I just know like Next.js or I know Tailwind or I know, you know, whatever it might be. And I think it's interesting to me with what you're saying too, is that that's definitely something I think that, you know, these younger developers are the ones that are earlier in their career need to start to push on and expand on. It's like understanding the underlying infrastructure of everything that you're building, because exactly what you're saying, how do you become a specialist? How do you become an expert? How do you get those big fat paychecks at those great jobs and companies if you don't understand and you're not a full expert on everything that you're working on?
It's so I give a talk at the Commitra Code conference about context, right? And one of the things I talk about when I mentor folks and they say, well, how can I grow my career? It's like, do you learn more about what you're doing?
Yeah.
Don't learn the intricacies of the syntax. Learn more about what you're doing. How does it fit into the system as a whole? How does it fit into the business as a whole? Be able to talk about how this function is going to help the company meet their quarterly goal, right? Because you should be able to draw a line from one to the other. And if you can't, right, what are you doing?
Fully agree. It's been so interesting to hear this sentiment around how important understanding the business side of technology has been in these conversations. Like, you are not the only one. Every time I've gotten someone in here who has been a more experienced, a more senior individual, a leader, someone who is, you know, leading in or specialty in their craft, right? That's the advice. They're like, you have to understand the business. What would be some of your tips that you could share with folks in terms of how they can understand the business? And also, I'm going to put the Commit Your Code presentation that you delivered in the show notes, because it was very good. And a lot of what his answer would be in your presentation. And so I'm going to share that with folks too.
Sure. I appreciate that. So I think the number one thing you can do is to ask questions, right? Yes. And it's not just like, hey, how do I do this thing? Or how does this thing, how does this fit in? Right. What I'm going to write this function. It's going to be in JavaScript. Where is it going to go to? What is this going to run on? What is the customer trying to do? Who is our, you know what I'm saying? Like, I've told a story in the past of really, you know, told stories in the past of really what it means to have the goal of what the customer is actually trying to do as your North Star.
Yep.
Right. Because if you're just trying to do the thing that you want to do, and you're not necessarily doing the thing that they want to do, there's, you know, you're pleasing yourself, and there's a word for that, right? But you're not pleasing the person who matters in this one, and that's the customer, right?
Yep.
And I'll give you a great example. There's a lot of work in the platform engineering space, right? Mm-hmm. A lot of work in the platform engineering space was to make it easier for developers to do stuff because, you know, they just needed the velocity or whatever, right? And a lot of the platform engineering teams are catering to the developers' needs and wants and desires, as if the developers are only writing things to be put on the platform and then never be used in the public. But if your developers are writing stuff that the public is going to consume, your customer is not the developer. Your customer is the paying customer who's going to be consuming that, right?
Yep.
You are writing something that is going to be consumed by your customers. Right. So the developers' needs and stuff like that are taken into account. But if you're only meeting developers' needs, the developers don't have the context for what's happening outside. Once it's completed, you do. Operations does, right? Yep. Your TAMs do. Your developer advocates do. Your customer success managers do. Your support teams do. And the customers do. Right. So all of those things must be considered when you are building a platform. That has to be job zero. And then you write the thing so the developers can have their little APIs to do the stuff. That is the dead last concern. That is the last thing you do. I'm not going to build a house around the wallpaper.
Boom. I love that so much. I think, I don't know about you, but like early in your career, you know, depending on what roles you had, I had a really beautiful opportunity where I was at an agency. And because of the human that I am, I actually don't want to say that I'm extroverted, but that's a whole conversation we're not going to get into. But I am people friendly, right? And I understand business. I came from business before I got into technology. And so I was the developer that they put in front of the clients. And they were like, hey, let's talk through the project. So if you've ever worked in a small agency, then you're brought into some of those conversations. You're a part of the work. You're working alongside the project manager. You're working alongside the designer. You're working alongside the rest of the people on the team, right? Mm-hmm. And so when I had those customer conversations, oftentimes I was able to break down really what seemed like complicated needs from a customer into what actually ended up being very straightforward needs on the actual technical side. And yes. I am curious how many developers are getting those types of opportunities, because I think that those opportunities are gold, because you have to sit there face to face with a customer and talk about technology, not only explaining it in a way that they understand, but also being able to take what they're telling you and formulate that into what that technology actually like looks like. Have you had any opportunities, any tips for devs to think about things that way?
I had that opportunity the first time I worked at a startup, right? Same thing, right? We had solutions architects, but they weren't like our solutions architects. They were from, you know, the company that acquired us. So they called us DevOps engineers back then, but we were SREs, you know. And we met with customers all the time. Matter of fact, the customers met with us and the support people mostly, and their salespeople like secondarily, right?
Yep.
We knew the customer's needs. Some folks have heard me tell the story about like working with Tinder, and how we knew those cats very well.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
And we knew their use case, and because we knew their use case, we were able to build solutions for them exactly how they need it. Right.
Love that.
But if you're not in a company of that size and that agility, mm-hmm. where you have to wear a lot of hats, you tend to get pigeonholed. Right.
Yeah.
And I do think one of the main things you can do as an engineer at any level and every level is to sit in on customer calls.
Yes.
Right. Even if you're just a fly on a wall, right? I want to hear what our customers are actually talking about, complaining. I want to hear what their business needs are, because then project managers have to, right? And if they're not, your project and project managers have to, they absolutely have to. You know, developer advocates, obviously, they do a lot. That's part of their jobs, but project managers too. But if your engineers, especially your senior engineers, aren't doing that, then they're missing out, right? Yep. They need to have some things, because they're going to have some context for things that you may not. They're going to have some more insight in the code. But especially as they're advising the juniors, they're going to now have the context of what the customer is actually trying to do. So you're going to make fewer mistakes. You're going to have to you're going to have to iterate less. Like, yes, fail fast is great for learning how to fail. Right. But if you want to be efficient, right, get more context.
I love that so much. I think it's interesting too, because, you know, speaking to these capabilities, at least I can presume that it has happened to you, but in DevRel roles specifically, I've actually been brought into a lot of sales conversations and a lot of sales opportunities, did a lot of field marketing type of stuff, a lot of sales engineering type of stuff, because of the personality and understanding it and being able to take that. I get the context, right? What you're saying, I understand it. And then being able to go in those sales conversations. And by the way, I really love doing them, because most of the time the salespeople are dudes and I'm a girl, right? And so in those conversations, they'd like look at the salesperson and be like, so can your technology do this? And I'm like, and I love it, because they'd be like, actually, you need to talk to Tessa about that. And I'm just like, mic drop, because it was just a beautiful thing. But I think that it's interesting in being able to do those opportunities to understand and to speak to them also in a sales sense, because then you're understanding the dynamics of the purchaser, right? Why would somebody buy something? Why do they want something? What's the value that they're getting out of it? Because oftentimes, and I still do this, even though I know that I should self-reflect, but we forget that the value of a product or the value of what we're building is maybe different than what our assumptions are, right? Someone mm-hmm. might need it for something else. And I think being exposed to those conversations are really, really valuable as well.
Yeah. Michelle brings up a good point. She says on LinkedIn to get familiar with Gong. Gong is a great tool. Otter AI is another one.
Circle Back is mine.
Yeah. If anything you see that has a note taker, right? There's a note taker in your call that's being recorded and like that. And if your sales org, if your org has it, uses it, and will give you access to it. Yeah. And you can, you know, that's a great little data project. Run, you know, find out what words folks are saying most, and what are their technologies, and which of your core technologies that they're concerned about the most. And it really, really helps. I think is one of the uses for AI, I think that is actually good is call transcription recording, especially for accessibility reasons. But it's a great way to do it to make it more efficient and you can figure stuff out. And a lot of those folks a lot of them can already summarize those and summarize groups of calls too. So getting context that way is a fantastic idea.
Yep. I definitely agree with the Gong thing. One of my clients over the summer, they had Gong and I was able to just dive in and I could listen to any sales conversation that I wanted to, which was very, very helpful, right? Because then again, speaking back to the value, you get to understand what the customer actually wants because and this isn't always the case, right? But even sometimes salespeople don't necessarily know if they're not, super technical or depending on their experience, right? They might not be able to bring those pieces together. And when we are technical and we can bring those pieces together, the value that we can bring to that company will far exceed the developer skills that we have.
Here's the dirty, not so secret about sales calls is salespeople 9 times out of 10 would absolutely kill to have a technical resource on a lot more calls, right?
Yep.
Especially that resource is intimately familiar with the product, right? As in, I write them or I work on them all the time, or it's like that. Just to have they can ask you questions, if not on the call, after the fact, right? Did you hear that? What do you think about this, right? Because they don't have the context for the technical side of it, right? Mm-hmm. It's really going to help them out strategically. So companies that have solutions architects, that's what solutions architects usually do. But even then, sometimes it still helps out a lot. Still helps out a lot to be able to get that insight on both sides.
Yep, I agree. And it's really interesting too. And this is kind of going down a little bit of a rabbit hole too, but I think it's really interesting on kind of that sales side, right? Depending on the company and the staff and the actual experience that they're bringing in, even partnering with them outside of calls, right? Like they can go through calls and questions that they've had and being able to, for the developer, understand what that customer conversation is. But then for the actual end user, for that salesperson, right? They're able to get insights. And that's actually what I did with the client is I took a step back, consumed the Gong, and I actually created an entire sort of enterprise play motion for them of like, hey, this is what these developers are looking for. This is the insights they need. This is the value that we can provide. And those are all conversations that happened outside, right? But I could absorb the calls and we can still have those conversations to allude into all of what needs to be told essentially.
So I think in the end, there's a lot more of growing outside your pot, so to speak, right? If the more I see outside of my, the more I see and understand outside of just whatever things I type on the keyboard, the better I am going to be, right? It's like if I'm designing a cog, right? Is it for a clock? Is it for an engine? Is it for, it's two different things, right? Yeah. And even if you tell me it needs to have this and this and this and this, right? Just a set of requirements on the sheet doesn't tell me enough, right? If I understand how it's going to be used and why, maybe I'm going to see something that the requirements didn't capture.
Exactly. Okay. Mic drop on that one. All right. So one of the other questions I like to ask, and we're kind of nearing the end of our time here, but when you are stuck, the amazing Tim Banks, when you get stuck, what's your go-to?
So as I often tend to do, I'm going to relate something to jiu-jitsu. Getting stuck is a thing that happens in jiu-jitsu. Normally stuck in side control or stuck in mount. Neither one are great. But when I'm stuck, the first thing I try not to do is panic, right?
Love that.
I'm going to take a breath. I'm going to defend my neck. And then I'm going to see, what do I have and what can I do? Right. Or what can I get to? Right. When someone is stuck in side control or mount, both of them involve someone being on top of you and kind of controlling, your legs are not in the game right now. So it's just your body versus their whole body. And a lot of people try and jump and move around and do everything in one big, real explosive moves and tire themselves out and then get the life literally crushed out of them. And I love doing it to people. Don't get me wrong. But the thing that I do is I take inventory of what I have. And then if I know I need to get an underhook and I don't have an underhook, my battle is now for the underhook, and it's a bunch of little things. I'm going to bump this way and move my arm that way. I'm going to shift you that way, blah, blah, blah. Okay, great. Now I have my underhook. What can I do with this underhook now? Well, I can do this. And I'm going to bump, blah, blah, bump. And I'm going to do a bunch of small little battles and small little moves that don't require a lot of energy until I get all the pieces I need. And then now I'm going to make the big move, right? And the only way you can figure that out is to know what the big move is, right? And then to piece along all the little things you need to do along the way based on where you are. So I work backwards from where I want to be and digest everything down in small parts. But the first thing I do is I calm the fuck down and I defend my neck.
That is a really, really beautiful analogy for it, because I think that it all plays into, you know, solving any kind of problem, right? How can you sort of like, what do you need to do immediately to protect yourself or to protect the situation that you're in or to do any form of, okay, I have to take some form of action now, right?
Yeah.
Exactly, exactly. But working back from, okay, if I'm trying to get to this end result, how do I get back into that? Mm-hmm. Okay, on a more actual direct technical sense, if you are stuck in code, what is your go-to? Do you go to peers? Do you go to forums? Do you go to, what's kind of your stack of steps? Do you rubber ducky? That's a very, obviously many of us rubber ducky, but sometimes we don't. We forget.
I don't know what rubber ducky is.
What? Shut up.
No. You got to remember, I'm an infrastructure person. I'm an ops person. So like my coding, when I get stuck in coding, you know, I'm old school. The first thing I'm going to go to is Google Stack Overflow, kind of thing like that, to look for something similar. I will check the docs, right? Because even today, and docs are not the best, right? But even today, 9 times out of 10, my question is answered in the docs.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
I love that. Because I came from before the internet.
Right. Yeah. Same. Well, okay. I'm edging on 40. So.
Oh.
A little bit younger, but still in the same vein of edging into the internet. So rubber ducky is just where you explain something to somebody. You're like, okay, this is the problem I have. I'm dealing with A, B, and C, right? And I can't get it to do D. And as you're explaining it, you're like, I'm an idiot. I forgot to do the step between A and B, because you just explaining it allows you to. But I think it's very similar to your sort of triage example, right? It's like working through that problem and really thinking about it. And that's exactly what you do in jujitsu, right? You think about where you need to go and what steps need to get you there.
So the thing that I've done before is I will literally copy and paste a code out of whatever context it's in. I will copy and paste a code and I'll put in a brand new thing. And then I'm like, oh, that's stupid. Why did I do that? You know, because I'm too busy thinking about it in, you know, like I'm relating other things. And which is wild, because I was just talking about context before, but also sometimes the context can lead you to thinking things that aren't, you're not looking at the thing you're looking at.
Yep.
Right. You're looking at everything else. And I was like, oh, I was trying to do this variable there, or I was trying to pass this like that. And no wonder it's not working, because I don't even have it declared properly in here. Right. So it's like, let me actually take everything out. I'm going to rewrite this piece that I'm doing to make sure this piece works. Yep. Now I'm going to plug it back into there. And then you usually get to change variable names or whatever. Right.
Right.
But take that piece out of its context, fix the piece, and then put it back in.
Yep. I love that advice. Okay. This has been an absolute lovely conversation. As you know, though, you and I could talk for hours and hours, which is always so lovely. Where can people find you on the internet?
On the internet, I'm mostly now on Blue Sky. I'm at elchefe.me on Blue Sky. I'm on LinkedIn. You can probably search my name. I don't think anyone else out there looks like me. I have an account on Twitter that's probably going to be going away shortly. It's there mostly is for archival, because I have very quality shit posts on there that I don't necessarily want to lose.
I love that.
And I've got a blog, tim-banks.ghost.io, which like anyone with just incredible amounts of ADHD, I have a ton of drafts, and I've got like 4, maybe 5 published, but you know, that's just how it is. But yeah, come holler at me at any of those. I'm always happy to talk. If you see me at a conference, usually happy to talk. If I'm overwhelmed, you're going to know I'm going to have on sunglasses and headphones. Maybe not then, but any other time, I'm great.
That's a good approach to the sort of like leave me alone face, the sunglasses. Cause like I'll do the headphones and the hoodie when I'm on a plane or something. So I'm like, don't talk to me, which is pretty rare when I don't want to be talked to, but the sunglasses, that will really seal the deal. No eye contact.
Let me give you something for all the neuro divergent folks out there.
Love it.
Conferences are horrendously overstimulating, right? Mm-hmm. Because of the noise, but also because there's so much crazy light coming into your face.
Yeah.
Please. The thing that I started doing is I wear yellow lens sunglasses, right? Which cuts off a lot of that. And if it gets really bad, I will just wear full on sunglasses, right? But it has greatly reduced my tendency to get overstimulated in those in those areas, even with the noise and everything like that. Just cutting out so much light, it is transformative. So if you find yourself getting real tired real quick, you know, like that, all the symptoms of overstimulation, try wearing some yellow lens or some outright just regular sunglasses inside. I don't care what people say, you know. Yeah. But this is there for me. But it helps a lot.
Yeah.
Oh, and if you got ADHD kids, try that too. Give them some yellow lens. So not blue blockers, actual sunglasses that reduce the amount of light coming in.
Interesting. I love that tip. Okay, before we sign off, any other last famous words or tips you want to share with anyone listening?
I would just say, start learning things outside of your day-to-day, right? Ask people who have different jobs, especially people who have quote unquote non-technical jobs, right? And you will find out usually that the areas of their concerns are quite vast, and the depths of their knowledge are quite vast. And your knowledge about the situation is very, very small. Get your eyes open that way, please. It'll help you out.
Oh, I love that. To layer on top of that, if you're not sure how to do that, pick up Rise by Patty Azzarello. Best book I've ever read about just being more connected, be more communicative, all the things inside of an organization or inside of a project or group of any kind that can help you do what Tim just said. I love this. All right. Well, it has been so amazing having you on the show.
It is always fun talking and hanging out with you, Tessa.
I agree. I need to find some local jiu-jitsu in Waco, and then I'll come down to Austin and you can show me all your tips.
If you want recommendations, I could probably give you some. But what you need to come down to Austin for the ball, darling.
Yes, yes, yes. The ball. I will come for the ball. All right. Well, with that being said, thank you all for listening. It's been a lovely morning here with Tim, and I will see you all tomorrow.